Hey, what's up, everybody? Hey, we are so glad that you guys are with us this morning. You know, we were talking about it this morning, and it's so funny. Man, I don't have a clue how church works and how church people work. You know, when we started Motion, I thought I knew exactly what we were going to do and how to build a church and how church works and all that stuff. And I've come to the conclusion or realization that, man, I don't have a clue. So I was thinking, man, it's raining and it's a little cold and nobody's going to show up to church. And all you guys, y'all are like the, Daniel says you guys are like the people that God really loves because y'all are really committed and you come to church when it's cray cray outside. So anyway, so glad you guys are here with us this morning. I want to give just a quick announcement on Kicks for Kids, kind of a continuation of one of the things that Daniel talked about. We've kind of started to get more and more of the details. I talked to a manager yesterday at Foot Locker for Kids, and they're going to help facilitate, kind of give us the hook up, right? So anyway, that'll be cool to as far as purchasing the shoes. And then we've also got somebody coordinating. Where's Shantae? Shantae, hey. She's going to be working at the, she works at the school, at schools, so she's going to be talking to the counselors and finding the kids that are in the most need that could really benefit from what we're trying to do with Kicks for Kids. So those are some of the things that are going on with Kicks for Kids. We're excited about it, and we're so glad that you guys are a part of it, right? Anyway, this morning we're continuing our series called Toxic. And what we've talked about up to this point is we've talked about some toxic thoughts that we have. Have you guys ever had toxic thoughts? And we've talked about our toxic beliefs and sometimes how we believe that you're not good enough and we're not good enough for God to use us. And it's just, you know, there's an element of truth to that, but it's not true because that's what grace is. Although we're not good enough, God decided that we were good enough. The value that something's value or what something is worth is what somebody else is willing to pay for it. And so you are worth whatever God was willing to pay for you, and that was his son, Jesus. So you're extremely valuable, right? So that's the second thing that we talked about. Last week, we talked about some more toxic stuff, and you know, it just gets all jumbled in my head, toxic, 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 right? And so this week, we're talking about toxic emotions. Have you ever had toxic emotions? Last week, we talked about toxic attitudes, by the way. I think I heard somebody whisper it, just in case I forgot. I didn't forget. I was just trying to move on, right? So this week, we're talking about toxic emotions. Have you ever had kind of an emotion that was just like, eh? Like, or you allowed your emotions to get out of sorts, or you kind of allowed your emotions to get the better of you or to overwhelm you? And here's the thing about emotions. Emotions are extremely powerful, good or bad. If your emotions are you know, you're feeling inspired and you want to just, you know, we kind of use the expression, you know, take hell with a water pistol. Like, that's how motivated you are and fired up you are. And your emotions are, like, joyful and happy and all of these things. That's extremely powerful. But on the flip side, if your emotions are, like, you feel kind of bummed out or you feel kind of, you know, down on yourself or negative about yourself, then that's also extremely power to the other degree, the other way. Like, you won't do anything if you allow your emotions to overwhelm you. I don't know about you guys. This is just me. If I have an entire list of things to do and I kind of start going over my list and I'm like, God, I've got so much to do. You know what the first thing I want to do is? Take a nap. Because I feel overwhelmed with all of the things that are going on. Because there's so much going on and I feel overwhelmed, I don't want to do anything. And I think our emotions are kind of like that. When there's so much going on and we get overwhelmed, we don't want to do anything. We become apathetic. We become kind of lethargic and lazy, and we're not active in our faith like we should be. And that's kind of the specific emotion that we're going to talk about today is apathy. When our emotions are out of sort and we're volatile, we become apathetic. You become lazy in your faith. You become lethargic. So our spirit suffers because of a toxic, apathetic emotion. Can we just be honest this morning in church? That seems like a logical thing to do, right? I've had seasons in my life or times in my life where I felt apathetic. And because I felt apathetic, I don't really want to pray, right? Or, man, I'll read my Bible tomorrow, right? Because I'm not feeling like it today. I'm apathetic today. And, man, that's a dangerous, dangerous place to be. It's a place that you don't want to live, for sure. You can visit every once in a while, but you don't want to live there, right? Because you'll be dead. You guys, you know what fire and how fire works. Fire is, if you don't keep the fire burning, if you don't keep adding fuel to the fire, throw another log on the fire goes out. And so you can let it dwindle down sometimes, but you better put another log on there so it keeps burning. This is the definition of apathy. Apathy is a lack of interest, enthusiasm, or concern. A lack of, excuse me, a lack of interest, enthusiasm, or concern. And I just don't think that that's how we're supposed to live our lives. We're supposed to live with a heightened sense of interest in everything that's going on and in the people around us and what it is that God wants to do. We're supposed to be interested. We're not supposed to be, on the flip side of that, or not be non-enthusiastic. I don't know what you would call that, you know, dull, I guess, for lack of a better term. Like, we're supposed to be enthusiastic. I love, and it's kind of cheesy because every week I talk about, in my head at least, I talk about how I'm not going to talk about sports, but I always talk about sports. And so one of my favorite coaches, he's crazy. His name is Jim Harbaugh, and he has this quote that he kind of lives by, and he's like, I want to live and attack every day with an enthusiasm unknown to mankind. And this guy is intense. Like, I mean, he's just, you see the veins popping out in his neck. I don't know how he hadn't had a heart attack yet. But he's I'm just being honest, right? So he's intense, and I think we're supposed to live with a little bit of enthusiasm. Like, be excited about your life. Like, I'm so frustrated, and I make fun of people that do this, not to their face, because that would be rude, right? So and it seems to be more females, I'm sure guys do this too, but girls that get on Twitter, and they go, ugh, my life sucks, period. And ugh is UGH, right? Ugh, not Uggs the boots. Ugh, my life sucks. You know what? It's always going to suck because you don't have any enthusiasm about it. You know what your life is? Your life is what you make it. Your life is what you make it. Anyway, that's not even in my notes. Sometimes, you know, something good happens. And so we're supposed to live with some enthusiasm. We're supposed to live with concern. We're supposed to be concerned about what's going on in other people's lives. You're supposed to be concerned about what's going on in your life so that you can be concerned about what's going on in other people's lives. It's dangerous. Apathy is dangerous because this is what apathy does. It undermines the foundation of your purpose. Like, your purpose, you're here for a reason. And if you're here for a reason, you should be excited about that reason. You should be interested in that reason. You should be concerned about that reason, the purpose that you have. And when you become apathetic, it undermines your purpose. It's like, I'm here, but whatever, you know? I'm here, but do I really matter? I'm here, but if I don't do it, somebody else will do it. And it's not going to happen. Like, that's just not the way it goes down. Like, you, we say this, you are the only you. And only you can do what you can do. So you better do what God has called you to do. Like, you, it's all about you, but it's not about you. So don't get overinflated, right? Life is about balance. It's all about balance. And so what we're going to do, kind of like we've been doing, we're going to frame this conversation around a phrase. And it's like last week, it's a phrase that we would probably never come out and say, but it's a phrase that's reflected in the way that we live sometimes. And that phrase is, I don't care. Have you ever had that attitude? You ever had that emotion like that, I don't care? And, you know, we try to glorify this phrase like, man, I don't care what people think. Well, you should, right? To a degree. Again, balance. Like, don't care so much that it dictates the way that you live your life, but you should care enough to be interested in their life. You should care enough to try to have influence in their life. You should care enough to know what's going on because people don't care how much you know until they know how much you care. Right? So if you don't care, you're missing the mark. You're missing the point. And if you walk around like, you know, I don't care, you're selfish and you're rude and you're missing the point for whatever that's worth. Not that anybody, when I come at you, I'm not coming at you. It's other people outside of motion. You guys would never do that, right? When we allow this toxic emotion of apathy to get into our hearts, this is what happens. We become less compassionate. We become less disciplined. We become less generous, we become less kind, we become less loving. Everything that we should be or should aspire to be and do, we become less of when apathy is in our lives, when you kind of live by this mantra that I don't care. It's garbage. That's not how you're called to live your life. It affects every part of your spiritual well-being, like we kind of talked about. I think our bodies are many different components and aspects, but they are all interconnected. You've heard kind of mind, body, soul, spirit, and people believe in 3 or 4 or 20,000 different parts that make up the whole. Whatever you believe, I just believe that it's all connected. Like, your mind and your heart are connected, and your heart and your spirit are connected, and your spirit and your physical well-being are all connected. So if one part of your body suffers, I'm just convinced that the rest of it's going to suffer. So if your emotions are in the tank and they're not where they need to be, then I just believe that the other parts of your body, your spiritual life will suffer. You've seen this where people have literally grieved themselves to death physically because their mental, you know, their mentality and their emotions were such that they were dying on the inside and they died on the outside. It's crazy how it's connected and how powerful it is. And so if we don't get our emotions right, if we allow apathy into our life, it affects every part of our life. It affects our spiritual well-being, which is, to me, the most important thing. You can go to the doctor, and he'll check up on your physical well-being. We're doing a spiritual checkup this morning. Anyway, this is the biggest problem with this emotion, in my opinion. You are placed here to care. Like, when you say that I don't care, that has to be a slap in the face of God. Like, it just has to be, because he's placed you here with, could you imagine, like, you know, as a father or a mother, when you have a child and you bring them into this world, right? And you give them all of these things, you give them a place to live and comfort and security and the needs that they have. And at 16 or 17, they're like, I don't care about my life. I don't care about all the things that you've done for me. I don't care what you've set me up for in the future that you've given me. I don't care. I'd be like, oh, yes, you do. You're going to find some care in there somewhere. I'm going to get it, you know. You know what I'm saying? Like, it would be a slap in the face of a parent for a child to do that. And I think that God probably feels the same way. When we walk around with apathy and we walk around like we don't care, like, it's got to be like that to God. Like, we're placed here to care. You're placed here in the world that you're in the season that you're in and the area that you're in with the people that you're with for a reason. So care about it, right? Right. Good. So, and it's just, you can't escape this. You can't get away from it. As you read the New Testament, you see over and over and over again this idea, or this, especially this phrase, one another, love one another, care for one another, be there for one another, pray for one another, one another, one another, one another. And none of that takes place if you don't care, or you're all about you, and you know, you try to make the focus of your life you. That never happens, and that never takes place if you don't care. And you're missing the point, because it's obviously there, right? If you're apathetic, you won't do these things, at least not to the degree that you should. Good. Should and good. Me and Monday had a fascinating conversation about what we should do and what we shouldn't do with our life, and we'll just leave it at that, right? We're going to look at a few other the dangerous things that apathy leads to. How many of you know that a lot of times, it's not always just kind of the issue that is the problem. It's the issues that the issue creates that's the problem, right? You know, so I don't know. Let me think of an example off the top of my head, right? Don't have one. You understand. Drew a blank. But, you know, when you have one issue in your life, sometimes it creates other issues in your life, and those become just as much of a problem or more in some cases. And so apathy, I think, is just like that. It's kind of a root that creates other problems and other symptoms that are, you know, harmful to us, they're toxic to us. And so one of the things that apathy creates is selfishness, right? Because this is what we do. We say we don't care about other people. We don't care what they think. We don't care about their lives. We don't care about their problems. We don't care about what they're going through. We just don't care. We don't care. So apathy leads to selfishness. And at first, it may even seem like when you say that you don't care about your circumstances, that may seem selfless, but it's not. Like, because if you don't care about you, you're not going to have the capacity to care about other people. I have never met somebody that hates themselves and loves other people. I've never met them. And if you have, I don't know. Put them in a museum, right? I don't think they exist. I've never met somebody that doesn't at least have a level of concern for themselves and their well-being that loves and cares for other people. Like, it just doesn't work like that. In fact, I believe that it's biblical to love yourself so that you can love other people, right? Because how will you ever truly express what love is if you don't know what love is? And so Mark chapter 12, verse 31 says this. It says, love your neighbor as you love yourself, as yourself, right? Love your neighbor. One version kind of expounds on it. It says, love your neighbor as you love yourself. So, you know, we always focus on the first part of that for whatever reason. Oh, yeah, love your neighbor. And that is awesome. You should. You absolutely should. Love the people around you. Love your neighbor. Love the people that God has placed in your life. Love them. But the second part of that is, as you love yourself. If you hate yourself, can you really love your neighbor? And there's, man, I think there's a hard balance to find in this. Like, how much do you love yourself? Enough, but not too much, right? Because if you love yourself too much, then you won't love other people because you love you some you, right? And so I think it's, man, there's so many aspects or components of our life that are about balance. If you love yourself appropriately, then you will love other people appropriately. Mark chapter 12, verse 31 says that. And then if you follow it up with John chapter 13, verse 34, it says this: a new command I give you, love one another. As I have loved you, so you must love one another, right? There's the one another phrase that we talked about. And what's so cool about this is that our capacity and our ability to love isn't really rooted in us. It's rooted in this passion that God had for us. As I've loved you, as I've modeled for you, as I've shown you what love is, do the same thing for other people. We're called to live unselfishly, but that has to be motivated by God's passion for us. That should translate to passion for other people. So when you kind of recognize, it's really just this simple. When you recognize what it is that God does and has done for you and the love that he's given towards you, that should kind of eliminate the apathy in your life and cause you to be loving towards other people and concerned with other people, right? Good. So the second toxic byproduct of apathy is this one. And this is one we don't like to talk about in church: complacency. You ever been at a place in your life where you just feel like you're not growing? You feel kind of stale, maybe, in your Christian walk? You feel stagnant? Good. I'm glad I'm the only one that's ever struggled with that. Glad you guys are thriving spiritually. Fantastic. This is a dangerous byproduct of apathy is complacency, because you kind of, when you start to buy into this emotion or this lie, really, that you don't care, what that does is it sets up a pattern of behavior where you don't do and you don't do and you don't do, and before you know it, you're just complacent, you're flat, you're not growing, and we're supposed to grow. Like, that's the problem with this idea or notion of complacency, is that that's not what we're here for. And there's so much cool language. It's kind of fun. I love when you read the Bible and you've got a sense of humor, because you can find some funny stuff, man. Like, you can find Jesus talking about going to the bathroom. You can hear Elijah making fun of a false god and talking about how he's busy in the bathroom. Like, I've got toilet humor, and so I love reading the Bible kind of from that perspective. That's fun. But it's also cool because when you read verses in the New Testament, Paul, he calls these people a bunch of babies. He's like, you guys are acting like a bunch of babies. And it's fantastic. This is what he says, and we'll jump back and forth. No, we won't, because I'll get lost. So the idea is, we'll get there, I promise. The idea is that we're supposed to grow. Just like a baby is born, if the baby was six ounces or 6 pounds and 6 ounces for the rest of its life, that would be weird, right? Like, you want the baby to grow. The purpose is to grow and ultimately to become a toddler and then to become a kid and to become a teenager and to become, just stop, you know, at the teenagers, whew, right? And so then a teenager and a young adult, and then, you know, it's all downhill from there, right? Can we be honest? Like, I wake up sometimes, I'm like, I'm 33. God, I don't want to be 63, because this is rough. You know, it's like getting out of bed is a three-part process. Like, you get your feet down, and it's like, you know, that's step one, and they're like, a half hitch, and then you can finally extend. And you guys understand, new youngins, y'all have no idea. It's coming. Just wait. But the point is, man, we're supposed to grow. Just like a baby is born and ultimately is supposed to grow into a full-blown, you know, adult, a human, full adult. Tavian, my son, it's so funny the way that he uses humans. And I don't know, everything, if it's an actual person, he's like, you mean that human person? I'm like, no, the robot person, dude. And what's so cool about this is, like, I have this idea in my head, and it's kind of like this perfect little growth chart. Like, I'm here, and I need to get to here. And so in my logical little brain, right, you go from point A to point B just nice and smooth. It never works out like that, right? Our growth chart is probably like, here's point B and here's point A, but you're gonna have point, right? But you're growing. Like, you step forward and you step back, two steps forward, one step back, and you have setbacks and you have growth seasons and you learn from your mistakes, because that's the best way to learn, right? I don't wanna learn from somebody who's never tried anything. Because you don't know anything. Like, you have all of this knowledge and theory. I want to know from people who've been there and tried it and failed some and got some life experience. You grow and you set back and you grow and you set back and you grow and you set back. And before you know it, you're mature. You've made it. You're there. And none of that ever happens if you're complacent. Like, you never get from point A to point B with your ups and downs if you're complacent, if you never step out, if you never are challenged, if you never try hard things. Like, I think we're so intimidated by failure. I think that most of us, if we're honest, we're so intimidated by failure that it keeps us crippled on the sidelines. And that's not where we're supposed to live our lives, man. We're supposed to be in the game. Like we talked about a few weeks ago, you're good enough to run the ball. Run the ball. If you missed that one, it's on a podcast. It's probably the best analogy I've ever had in my entire life. Just a tease, right? And so this is what Paul says. This is where Paul kind of makes fun of a group of people from Corinthians. In 1 Corinthians chapter 3, verses 1 through 3, he says this. Brothers and sisters, he's like addressing them. Hey, he recognizes them as other followers of Jesus. And this is what he says. He's like, I could not address you as people who live by the Spirit, but people who are still worldly. Paul just comes at him, bro. He's like, listen, y'all are missing the mark. You're missing the point. You're living like you used to live with the thoughts that you used to have, not the thoughts that you should have. If, like I wrote to you previously or in a later letter, I guess, 2 Corinthians 5:17, when Christ is in you, you're a new creation. You have new thoughts and new attitudes and a new demeanor and a new purpose, but you're living like you used to live. What's up with that? That's the New Chris version. That's what Paul would have said had he been alive today. And so he's like, look, I couldn't address you as people who are spiritual, but people who are worldly, and you're living like you used to live. And then he says this, mere infants in Christ. You know what that means? You guys are acting like a bunch of babies. That's what Paul said to them, not to us, right? And verse 2, this is so good. He said, I gave you milk. Man, it's just, this is so funny. I gave you milk. Because you couldn't even handle solid food. I had to give you Gerber because you couldn't handle a steak. For you were not ready for it. Indeed, you are still not ready. And you know what he's doing? This is what Paul's doing. I'm convinced. Paul's coming at their apathy. He's coming at their complacency. He's coming at their willingness or lack of willingness to grow. He's like, you're babies. You're acting like a bunch of babies. You're still eating milk and you should be eating steak, bro. Come to the light. Get saved, eat some meat, you know? Just take from that what you want. Verse 3, you're still worldly. You're still acting and thinking and behaving the way that you used to think. For since there is jealousy and quarreling among you, are you not worldly? And you know what? I'm just convinced that sentence, that question, what he's really saying is, he's like, hey, since you're still fighting among each other, what you're really saying is, I don't care. I don't care about you, and because I don't care about you, I'm willing to fight with you. And I'm jealous of you. And the reason I'm jealous of you is because I don't care about you, because if I really cared about you, I would rejoice with those who rejoice and mourn with those who mourn. I don't care. That was their attitude. And he's like, come on, man. Are you not acting like mere humans? Are you not acting like you used to act and you used to think? And this is what I really think we could take away from that last sentence. He's like, are you not acting like mere humans? He's like, are you not acting like you've got purpose that's higher than this? Are you not acting like God has given you something to do with your life? You're missing the mark. You're missing the point. Stop acting like babies. Stop being complacent. Stop being apathetic and grow. And I think Paul's just, man, he's coming at him in a very, in my opinion, a humorous way, but it's also, sometimes we use humor to mask, like, the burn, right? Have you ever done that? And I think maybe Paul was doing that. I can't be convinced of that for sure, but I think he was. So this morning, the last thing we're going to talk about is how to overcome apathy, because I don't ever want to come in and tell you all of these things that are wrong with our lives and wrong with the world and never give solutions to the problem, right? That's just, to me, that's immature, but what do I know? So overcoming apathy this morning, as we always try to do, we just present solutions to the problems that we bring up or the issues that we bring up. We can overcome apathy if it's gotten into your life. Even if it's, you know, to varying degrees or greater degrees, I'm still convinced that we can overcome apathy. It just may be more work for some of you if it's deeper rooted. Just like I think everybody could get in better shape, But if you've just kind of, you know, at the gym, what's that? Who's that? I've never met him, right? If you've allowed yourself to get so far out of shape, you can still get back into shape. It's just going to be a lot more work, right? And I think that the same thing is true with this. We can all get out of apathy if we work at it. And for some of us, it may just be more work. We overcome apathy. This is how you overcome apathy. How many of you guys had a Nintendo Entertainment System as a child? I'm not talking about Super Nintendo or Nintendo 64 or Wii or Wii U. I'm not talking about any of that. I'm talking about a Nintendo Entertainment System 1985 edition. Let's go. My gamer's in the house. We've got one sitting on our little entertainment center as we speak. It's classic. It's legendary. And you know what you had to do with a Nintendo sometimes? You had to reset it to get it to work right. You had to... This is how you pick up the cartridge. You got to pull it out, pick up the cartridge. And then if you're really good, because most people thought that would be enough, and that's never enough, then you got to put it in so that the lip of it is just barely over the ledge, and then you slam it down. And you think that's enough, but it's not. It's a three-step process, right? And then once you get it in there, you slap the back of the NES on both sides. Turn the power on, boom. You have to reset. And I'm just convinced that sometimes we need a reset in our perspective. We need a reset in our understanding. And I think that we overcome apathy with a reset. Sometimes we just think that we're supposed to live our lives based on how we feel. You need a reset. You don't live your life based on how you feel. You live your life based on this idea that God is with you, he's for you, he's got purpose for you, like you're here for a reason. That's how we live our lives. So sometimes you need to reset. Change the way that you think about things, because if you think wrong, you'll do wrong. If you think wrong, you'll live wrong, right? And it's just, it's a dangerous pattern and place to be. And so 2 Corinthians chapter 5, verse 7, it says this, we live by faith, not by sight. And we don't do, let's just be honest, we don't do this most of the time. We live by what we see. We live by what we feel because of what we see. We live by our circumstances. We base our emotions on everything that's going on rather than who it is that we are. We base our emotions on how people feel about us, what they think about us, what our circumstances are. Did we get the raise at work? We base our feelings on all of these things rather than who it is that God says that we are and what he's called us to do and the purpose that he's placed in our hearts and the destiny that he's given us. That's what we're supposed to base our life on, because you know what? The feelings are always going to be volatile. They're always going to be up and down, and you're going to be volatile as a result of basing your life and your worth on that. But when you find something that's steady and even, I love the way it says in Hebrews chapter 13, verse 8, it says, Jesus Christ is the same yesterday, today, and forever. It's a straight line, man. There's no volatility. That's what we place our faith in. That's what we place our trust in. That's where we find our worth and our value. That's where we get our emotional stability, because your circumstances are always going to be up and down. The people around you, how they feel about you is always going to be up and down. Have you noticed how in relationships, like, you meet somebody one day and you think you're best friends, and you see them again the next day and nothing has changed, but you think they hate your guts? Am I the only one? God, you guys make me feel so insecure sometimes, right? And so you just can't find worth and value in that. You can't base your emotional well-being on that. Your emotional well-being is Jesus. And you need to reset, stop basing everything on this and base everything on this. And everybody just bounce with me. What? Man, it just got real. Anyway, that's just it. And it's really, here's the thing, it's really that simple. In theory, right? The hard work is not coming in here and hearing this. The hard work is not even knowing this. The hard work is doing this. The hard work is stop allowing the tail to wag the dog, right? Stop allowing your circumstances to dictate how you feel. Stop allowing what people think about you to dictate how you feel. And not in the sense that you don't care what they think, but in a sense that you're finding value in that. Don't allow your tail to be wagged by, you know, don't allow the dog to be wagged by the tail. That is a hilarious expression to me, because I just imagine the whole dog being thrown back and forth by the tail of a dog. We don't live by what we see. We don't live by what our circumstances are, and we don't live on how we feel. What we do is we act out of love, which is much less of a feeling than you've been lied to and told. Because we're told that love is a feeling, and that's just crap. Love is not a feeling. Love is a choice. You wake up every single day and choose to love people. You choose to love, if you're married, you wake up and choose to love your spouse, just like some days they wake up and choose to love you. And you should know, right? No elbowing in the, right? See some of that. We choose to love. We choose to believe that we're here for a reason. It's all about choice. Love, just like love is not a choice, we have to choose to not base our feelings and our emotions on what's going on. We choose to continue to believe that we have purpose. We choose to continue to believe that we should love other people. We choose to continue to believe that we should serve other people. We choose to continue to grow and mature spiritually and not being babies. Like, we're not going to be babies anymore, right? We choose to grow up sometimes, and we choose not to get caught in these stupid little quarrels and these stupid little dramas. We choose to grow up, because this is, you know what we do with drama? As soon as you hear it, man, your ears perks up. What? What did so-and-so say about so-and-so? Oh, no, she didn't. Y'all act like I'm lying. You know I'm not. When we detach negative emotions, it enables us to care for ourselves as we should, so that we can care for others as we should. It creates compassion for others and their hurts and their needs. When you eliminate this phrase from your life that I don't care, you win, others win, your relationship with God wins. It's just the perfect place to be. It's where you want to live your life. And so, like I said, I know this is easy in theory, but it's when we leave this place, it's when you wake up tomorrow, what are you going to do with it, right? Like, man, just don't allow it to become a place that you live. You can visit every once in a while, like once a year or two. You know, that's it. Don't be a Debbie Downer, right? But don't live there, man. Don't let this be a place where you take up residence. That's not who you are. That's not what you're called to. So this morning, I just want to pray for us that we kind of, man, we just get this right, you know? I think that's really all we can, when it's all said and done, that's all we can try to do is do the best that we can to honor God with the way that we live and the way that we think and the way that we act and what our lives look like outside of the four walls of the church. So I want to pray to that end this morning. Father, we love you so much. We are so thankful for all that you do. God, the love that you've given to us. God, the fact that you weren't apathetic towards us, that you weren't complacent. That Jesus, you came and did what it is that you were called to do, that you accomplished your purpose. Really, God, more than anything, or as much as anything, as an example for us to do what it is that we've been called to do, to not be distracted or knocked off course by this, that, or the other, God, but to be who it is that you've called us to be, not based on how we feel, not based on our circumstances, God, but we choose every day when we wake up in the morning and our feet hit the floor, God, we choose to be yours. We choose to belong to you. We choose to live by faith and not by sight. We choose to believe that we're here for a reason. And God, if we believe that we're here for a reason, we should be passionate about that. We should be concerned with that. We should be enthusiastic with the people that you've placed around us and the plans that you have for us. God, I pray that you would help every one of us to fight tooth and nail against this toxic emotion of apathy. God, I am convinced that it'll wreck us if we don't. God, that we'll never be who we've been created to be, that we'll never live up to our fullest potential or capacity, God, if we don't fight against apathy. So help us to do this. By your grace, help us to be people, God, who aren't worldly and who aren't merely humans, God, but we understand that we've got a higher calling and a higher purpose and a higher destiny, God, that you have created us for something more. God, we ask this in Jesus' name. And everybody said, amen.